We're going to be beginning a new series shortly. In the interim, I just wanted to sit down and have a talk with you this morning about something that is so dear to my heart. In fact, if I could only give you one message, if I could just go to a church and only have one thing to say to the congregation, this is what I would talk about. The title of this message is Our Greatest Gain. Our Greatest Gain. And it comes from 1 Timothy chapter 6. Let's read it together, verses 6 through 10. Now, godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. And having food and clothing, with these we shall be content. But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and harmful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. Of all the different things that you could gain in your life, and certainly that's much of what our lives are about, what it is we're going to gain. I mean, you never ask a group of grade schoolers, hey, what do you hope to gain when you grow up? You never hear them say, oh, don't want to gain anything, just want to lose. Just here to lose. We all want to gain. That's not the question. The question is, what is it that you hope to gain out of life? What are you striving for? What would you consider your greatest gain of all the things that you might be able to seek after? The cars and the boats and the positions and the titles and the relationships and the experiences and the travel and all the things that you could do. What would be your greatest gain? Well, I want to talk to you about two things that I would consider to be our greatest gain. In other words, if you were to go to God and He was some genie in a bottle and He could give you whatever you might request, these are the two things that I would recommend that you ask God for above everything else. It's not fame and it's not fortune. It's godliness and contentment. Godliness and contentment. Now, these are two things that I have been striving towards my entire adult life. It's not only my passion, it's not only my worship unto God, it's my career, it's everything. My whole life is wrapped around these two things. And yet I find that both of them are a constant source of struggle. In other words, neither of them come easily to me. I'm sure they come easily for you, but I'm just talking about what I go through. Just so that if it ever happens to you that godliness becomes a difficult thing or that you become discontented with your life, you can remember back, oh, I remember Gary used to struggle with that. Let me get the tape. Okay? Godliness and contentment. One of the reasons is because I think sometimes in our pursuit of godliness, we realize that we're never going to totally attain a godly life. We're always going to fall short in some measure. And sometimes we can even get discontented in trying to live a godly life. And so this is like a double-edged sword, where if you do not have them going for you, your life becomes very dull. But if you have these things working for you, your life will be amazing. God will do incredible things in you and through you. The first thing I'd like to talk about is godliness. And ask ourselves the question, what is godliness? I mean, okay, it's a pretty big word, it's a pretty big topic. What is it? How do you break it down? When you talk about godliness, what are you referring to? Well, specifically, you're referring to the attributes of God. What God's nature is all about, and then allowing those characteristics of God to begin to play themselves out in our lives. For example, God is love, the Bible tells us. 1 John 4, 7 and 8. And so if God is love, for us to be godly, we need to learn how to love others. You never look at somebody who was full of hate and selfishness and say, oh, there goes a godly guy. Right? But if someone is, and love is a huge word. I mean, there's so much wrapped up in that word. 1 Corinthians 13 has a whole chapter just to break down what love encompasses. It's patient. It's kind. It's not boastful. It doesn't seek its own. It's so many things. But if you are to be a godly person, you need to learn how to love others. Love needs to be a huge part of your life. You can't be godly and not learn how to exercise love. And Paul says earlier in this book to Timothy in chapter 4, exercise yourself towards godliness. Get spiritually fit. Get in spiritual condition. Work out your salvation. Exercise yourself towards godliness. And love is one of those things where if we're going to be godly, we've got to exercise it. It doesn't always come naturally. You know, there's different types of love. In the Greek, there's four different words for love, in fact. Storge, which is a family love. Phileo, which is a brotherly love. Eros, which is an erotic or romantic love. And agape, which is a divine, unconditional, undeserved love. And while we might get caught up in all kinds of other different types of love, it's the agape love that is the godliest kind of love that we need to be exercising in our life and working it out and getting it going for us. And it needs to be practiced. It just isn't going to happen overnight. You have to work at it in a sense. Calling upon the Lord and giving up of yourself and so forth. God is holy. If you're going to live a godly life, then you need to exercise holiness. What does that mean? Holiness means purity, without sin, doing what's right. I mean, when it's talking about God as being holy, it means He's perfect. He does what's right all the time. Never does anything wrong. And so that means we need to do what's right. We need to live pure lives. You never look at somebody that's full of sin and wretched and immoral and go, hey, there goes a woman of God. Look at her down there at Pechanga, just losing all her money. What a godly gal. Want to be like that, you know? No. And I know none of you have ever been there. I'm just saying, in case you know someone that does. Huh? Holiness. You cannot be godly if you're not practicing love. You can't be godly if you're not practicing holiness. And isn't it true that godliness is the measure of success in our life? This holiness, this love. God is all-knowing, so we need to be smart. You ever look at a fool and go, there goes a godly guy. God is strong. We need to have a strength about us, you see. These are the attributes of godliness. But if you notice that there are certain things in life that we have just a natural tendency to be attracted to and things that we're unattracted to. Have you ever asked yourself, why are we all attracted to certain things? For example, you look at a newborn baby and you look at that child and you see the innocence in that child and there's just something so beautiful about it. I mean, it's universal. It's universal. Everybody looks at that child, sees the innocence of that child, and we're attracted to it. Why? Because it represents to us a piece of God's nature. God is innocent, you see. And so we are attracted to that innocence in that child because it's an attribute of God. There's something in our soul that's naturally attracted to the things of God. Beauty. Why are we attracted to beauty? How come you don't see a dead weed on the side of the road and go, oh, look. I mean, silly, right? Why? Because God is a God of beauty. When we get to heaven, it's going to be gorgeous. Use your imagination. Streets of transparent gold. Foundations of the New Jerusalem of all kinds of precious stones. Reds and greens and diamonds and blues and ah. Gates made of a solid pearl. And shining and reflecting off of each of them the glory and the radiance of God Himself. It's going to be gorgeous. God is a beautiful God. That's why we're attracted to beauty. Why aren't we attracted to something that's ugly and disgusting? Because God's not ugly and disgusting. He's a beautiful God. You see what I'm saying? Why are we attracted to wisdom and not folly? Because God is wise. This is why we gravitate towards these things. You say, so Gary, that sounds so simplistic. So why is there a difficulty in us living godly lives if it's so attractive? How come we're not more drawn to godliness? Here's the reason. Because what Satan does is he takes that original attraction and he corrupts it. So that now we go beyond the parameters of what God originally intended. And the love that we once had that was a godly love now becomes an ungodly love. Take beauty, for example. We're attracted to something that's beautiful, but then that attraction towards what is beautiful, especially in the area of relationships and sex, can be taken to an unhealthy extreme. Where once something that was beautiful now becomes something that can be so degraded, and it's not what God intended. That's exactly what Satan does. He takes something that was intended for godliness and to reflect God's character, and Satan twists it and deceives us. And we bypass what God originally intended to get caught up into all kinds of other things. Why are we attracted towards prosperity and success? Because God's a victorious God. So what's wrong with victory and success? Nothing, if done in the proper context. It's when we start to put these things above the Lord Himself and we start worshiping the created thing rather than the Creator. We worship the beauty and we want that beauty. We don't want God and the one that makes it beautiful. We just want the beauty, you know. God, get out of here. I want this relationship. Whatever. Same thing with success. It's fine to prosper. It's fine to be successful until you say, God, get out of the way of my success. This is what I want. The success of it. The money, the wealth, the material things. And now you push God out of the picture. You see, now you've corrupted something that was godly. And I know for sure that when we all get to the end of our lives, the things that we will hold most dear will be things of character, things of godliness, spiritual things. Not physical things. That's why Paul says in verse 7, we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. We came in having nothing, we're going to go out having nothing. I've never seen a hearse with a U-Haul trailer behind it heading down to the cemetery. Your stuff's gone after you die. Somebody else is going to receive it. And so why invest your whole life in something that's temporary? I mean, if you can only gain two things, if you had to pick, if you had to prioritize, if you had to set a value on what's really important, wouldn't godliness be at the top of the list? Isn't godliness the greatest definition of success? I know for me, that no matter what would come of the church, no matter what would come of my bank account, no matter what would come of anything in my life, if my wife and my daughters and the leadership of the church and my best friends and those that know me the closest can say of me after my death, Gary was a godly man, I've succeeded. I've succeeded. That's success. Are you going to have your difficulties financially? Yes. Are you going to get, you know, ripped off when it comes to material things? Yes. Are you going to have some physical problems with your health? Yes. There's going to be difficult things that come in and out of your life. That's not the issue. The issue is how you handle it. The issue is your character. The issue is your godliness and how you respond. You see, we're always praying, dear Lord, take this trial away. I don't want to go through this. I don't want to deal with this. God, I can't believe you let this happen to me. God said, what do you think you're here for? This is a test. This is training. I'm here to discover what kind of a godly individual you're going to be, and you're here to discover what kind of a great God I already am. That's the whole point of it all. You see, we want heaven too soon. We want to go to a place where there's no more problems, there's no more trials, there's no more tears, and there's no more tribulation. God says, that day's coming, saint. Hold on. That day's coming. But this is a time of testing. This is a time to see how you're going to respond when your boss says, we've got to shut down the company. This is a time to see how you're going to respond when the doctor says, the tests don't look good. This is a time to see how you're going to respond when the referee makes a bad call concerning your little one out on the field. Hello. And after everything is said and done, well, more said than done, but when everything's said and done, isn't it true that the most important thing was, how did I handle the things that God sent towards me in my life? So instead of saying, Lord, make everything perfect, perhaps we should be praying, Lord, give me the spiritual stamina, the faith, the courage, and the patience to stand for godliness even in the midst of such difficulty and trial, you see. That's the real issue. Godliness. Can the people that know you best say that about you? I mean, can you look in the mirror and say, you know what? You're a godly woman. You're a godly man. Now, you might say yes. You might say no in your heart right now. Let me just tell you this. When it comes to this issue of godliness, Satan would love for us to think in terms of black and white. Either you're godly or you're not. Can I tell you? It's not a black and white issue. There's not a single person listening to this message that is completely godly or completely ungodly. The most evil of persons have done godly things, have been nice to someone, have given something to someone. And the most godly of people have done sinful things that they're ashamed of and don't want to be revealed. We all have godliness and ungodliness within us. That's not the important issue. The real issue is what percentage of your life is godly and what percentage of your life is ungodly. And that percentage of godliness is increasing and that percentage of ungodliness is decreasing. For example, you might be able to say this morning, my life is 90% ungodly. But it was 95% a year ago, so I'm in the right direction. Now, hear what I'm trying to say. You're never going to be 100% godly. And Satan would love to put such a guilt trip on the church and say, if you can't be godly, then you're a hypocrite. Why even try? Some of you are afraid to stand up and let people know you're a Christian at work because you know you're not always going to be Christian-like, and so you don't even want to carry that title or bear that title, and so you don't even let people know you're a Christian because you know you're not always going to walk like Jesus every day you go to work. Hey, God doesn't expect you to be like Jesus every day. He expects the percentage of time that you are like Jesus is increasing as you grow throughout your life. This is what it means to work out your salvation. You don't work for your salvation, but you work out your salvation. You have to exercise yourself towards godliness. It's not going to come easy. You have to make a determination. I'm going to be patient. I'm going to be kind. I'm going to be generous, you see. Let me just get a poll this morning with a show of hands. Can I see from you how many of you over the past year or two of your life, when you look over what you've been about these last year or two, can honestly say that you're more godly now than you were a couple of years ago? Can I see your hand? Absolutely! That's all it takes! That's what God's after! That's the direction you want to go! You're growing in godliness! That's what it's all about. Are there going to be times when your children look at you as parents and they go, oh, Oh, boy. What's your goal in life? I don't want to be like my dad, you know? Yeah, there's going to be times when we blow it. But hopefully you're getting better and better as a parent. Here's what I've found. Either I am getting better and better or worse and worse. More and more godly or more and more ungodly in my life. And I want that percentage to constantly be improving. That's how I can glorify God. And the times when I realize I've done something ungodly, I need to stop it as soon as I possibly can. Put off the old man and put on the new man. Godliness, your greatest gain. I don't care how much money you have, what kind of title you have, what kind of position you have, or how many relationships you have. If at the end of your life, the people that know you best cannot say that you're a godly person, you have failed. And the opposite is so true too. You might not have much in the bank. Maybe you didn't have much of a career. Maybe it was simple. Maybe you didn't have much of an education. Maybe it was simple. But you were godly. You're a success. You're a success in the eyes of God. Gain godliness. Secondly, contentment. Contentment. Webster's definition of contentment means to be satisfied, to make do with, to be at peace with oneself, or to have as much as one could wish. You're just satisfied. There's a sense of satisfaction and contentment about your life. And this is something that has been a struggle for me my whole life. It's still a struggle. There are times when I get discontented and I think the grass is greener on the other side of the fence. Oh boy. How we get that syndrome in our life where we think, boy, wouldn't it be great if I was in the other person's shoes? You know what we don't realize? We don't know what our neighbor's water bill's like. We don't know the amount of time they spend pulling weeds. We don't know how often they have to put fertilizer on that thing. I mean, to have a green lawn takes a lot of work. Is that really what you want? Is that really what you want to live for? Is that really what's important to you? We see people driving that car and we think, oh man, I wish I could drive a car like that. Do you? I mean, let's think about it for a second. I mean, is this really what's important to you? Do you want that person's insurance? Do you want to have to pay their registration every year? Do you want to have to pay the monthly payments on that thing? Do you want to have to freak out every time a pebble gets kicked up on the freeway? Ah! Back, you Satan of demonic, you know, whatever. You start going berserk. You know, the people I see that are the most contented driving around are the guys just have an old clunker. You just throw whatever you want, baby. I don't care. And when my engine blows up, I just go buy me another one. It doesn't matter to me. Content. We have this attitude, the grass is always greener on the other side of the fence. That's not true. Isaiah chapter 26, verses 3 and 4. Write it down. Ought to be a memory verse for you. It's so key. Isaiah 26, verses 3 and 4, it says this. You will keep him in perfect peace. In other words, contentment. Whose mind is stayed on you because he trusts in you. Trust in the Lord forever, for in Yah the Lord is everlasting strength. I've noticed that I lose my contentment when I stop focusing on the Lord. And I start focusing on my surroundings and on my circumstances. But the word's very clear. God will keep you in perfect peace if your mind is stayed on Him. It's been said, a thankful heart is not only the greatest of virtues, but the parent of all other virtues. To live through your life in a discontented state of mind is a terrible thing. And it's so easy to do. I wonder what it would be like if I was married to him or her instead of my current spouse. I wonder what it would be like if we didn't live in Menifee, but we lived over there. I wonder what it would be like if I got out from under this heavy house payment and we had a smaller house and we could take more vacation, I wonder what it would be like if we could get out of this small house and get into a bigger house where we had more room. It never ends. That attitude that life would be better if I was over there. When you get over there, you realize that life normally isn't much better over there. It's all in how you look at it. It's all in how you approach it. And yet many of us are discontented because we're not going after the things that God would intend us to go after. Instead, we're going after things that would make us happy instead of God that would make us happy. He says in 1 Timothy 6, verse 8, "And having food and clothing, with these we shall be content." Come on, Paul. You expect me to be content with my food and my clothing? Come on. Get real. You got to have the boat. You got to have the motorhome. You got to have the 19-car garage. Come on, Paul. Not according to Paul. Paul said in Philippians chapter 4, "I have learned in whatever state I am in to be content." Oh, sure. That's probably because you're riding high on cloud nine, hanging out with Jesus as an apostle. No, it wasn't. Paul wrote these letters to Timothy and to the church of Philippi and so forth while he was awaiting the verdict of his sentence, which may have been death. He was literally on death row. And he said, "I've learned in whatever state I'm in to be content." I don't know what you're going through and how difficult your struggle might be this morning, but I don't know if you're on death row. Even if you are on death row, Paul says, you can find a contentment there in Christ. And what I love about that statement is Paul says, "I have learned in whatever state I'm in to be content." That means there was a time in Paul's life when he was not content. And he had to learn contentment. He had to grow in that area of his godliness, you see. It just didn't come natural for Paul. And it encourages me because if there's hope for Paul, there's hope for me. If I struggle with contentment, maybe I can learn to be content as well. What an amazing man. Next to Jesus, I think Paul is the godliest example in the New Testament that we can find. Whatever circumstances he was in, Paul was content. When he was hailed enthusiastically upon his return to churches that he planted, Paul was content. When he was chained to a particularly impatient and unsympathetic Roman soldier, Paul was content. When he and his friends were on their way to Jerusalem to deliver a generous financial gift from Gentile converts on the mission field, Paul was content. When he was preaching to scholars in the intellectual capital of the world, Paul was content. When he was leading a runaway slave to Christ, Paul was content. When he was preaching to a king, Paul was content. When he was writing a theological masterpiece, Paul was content. When he was waiting to appear before a court that could sentence him to death, Paul was content. Whatever his circumstances, he was able to find that contentment. What a terrible thing to go through your whole life and for the majority of it to be in a discontented state of mind. Constantly focused on negative things, constantly with a bad attitude. It's going to be hard for people to give a good eulogy at your funeral service if you've had a bad attitude your whole life.
Please, turn your tape to side two for the rest of this message.
It's so important to discover that contentment. And this is something that doesn't come easily for me. It's very natural for me to think, I wonder what it would be like if, and then you can fill in the blank. One of the main things that I think about, and I think about it almost every day, is I wonder what it would be like if I spoke Indonesian fluently and I could travel the country spreading the gospel from village to village. How radical would that be? Be like Jesus and the Apostle Paul on my missionary journey. Man, it'd be incredible to sit down with village chiefs and share with them the good news in their own language. Be radical. And then I'll go on a short-term missionary trip to Indonesia and I'll be reminded what it's like third world country. Poor living conditions. People looking at you like a dollar sign all the time. Diarrhea most of my trip, long, you know. My daughter gets sick, you know. Would have died without proper medical attention in time. Staph infection and so forth. It's a difficult place to go to. And so that's just it. When you look at it from one perspective, you see only the good things. And sometimes when you get headlong into it, you see that there's not only the good, but there's the difficult as well. But I'll be like that from time to time. I wonder what it would be like doing something else. What I've discovered is the joys of life will begin to come if I'll just get into it. Wherever I'm at, whatever I'm doing, if I'll just get into it, I'll find that fulfillment and that happiness. In my marriage, I need to get into it. And not think about, I wonder what it would be like if Lisa and I didn't marry so young. I wonder what it would be like married to a brunette, a redhead, a Chinese, a African-American. I wonder what it would be like if I wasn't a pastor, but I was doing something else for a living. I didn't have to live in a fishbowl here in this community. I wonder what it would be like if I made more money. I wonder what it would be like if I made less money. Just think about all this stuff. And it's useless. And God, show me, Gary, grow where I've planted you. Get into it. Get into your marriage. Get into your children. Get into your church. Whatever you're doing, be there. Be there. Get the Play-Doh out with your kids. Wrestle around on the floor. Be there. Get into it, you see. This is how you bring the most out of life. There are times when I'll sit on the couch and I'll just sit there and think, I wonder what it would be like doing this and doing that, and I'll just think. And sometimes after a half an hour or an hour or an hour and a half of just thinking, it's like I finally come to reality and God says, well, I'm pretty sure that doing anything would be better than just sitting there thinking about it. Get up and live your life. God's given you a beautiful wife. If you were married to a brunette, you'd go, oh, if I could be married to a blonde. Oh, well, I'm married to a blonde. Thank you, Jesus. She's smarter than I am, too. I mean, just God is good. And I got healthy kids, and I got a great church, and I get to do all kinds of stuff. Oh. Sometimes the reason why we're discontented is that our pride gets in the way, and we think that we deserve more than we really do. If you think that life should give you so much and you have so much that should be coming to you, and if it's not coming, you're going to be discontented, and it all stems from pride. There was a time in my life when I was just discontented and I was struggling, and I got in my car and I took a drive and I went to this place and just started walking to clear my mind. And God just had a talk with me. I said, Lord, why am I so discontented? I have so much that I should be thankful for. How come I'm not happy? God said, it's because you think you deserve more than you really do. I said, I think you're right, Lord. God said, you want to know what you really deserve? I said, no. He said, I'm going to tell you anyway. You deserve hell. Gary, you have a sinful nature where you are attracted towards things that I despise. There is a wickedness and a sin in your heart that I had to send my son to clean up. You deserve hell. Anything beyond that that you get that's a blessing from me is icing on the cake. You ought to be jumping up and down and clicking your heels together. What a change of attitude that gave me. Then I began to look upon all the things that I had from that perspective. How blessed I was for my income and my church and my marriage and my children, and everything began to look beautiful. It's amazing. that in the flesh, no matter how much you have, it's never enough. But in the spirit, no matter how little you have, it's always enough. It's the difference between the optimist and the pessimist. The optimist said, going to the well with his bucket, there's never been a life as great as mine. Where I always come to this well with an empty bucket that I don't walk away again full. And the pessimist said, there's never been a life as miserable as mine. Where I walk away from this well full, but I don't have to come back again empty. What's the story of your life? Is your glass half empty or is it half full? Contentment. Appreciating life as it's coming to you and making the most of it. If life deals you lemons, you got to make lemonade. You can't just sit there and suck on that and get that sourpuss on your face and... See, I've got this theory that as you grow older, your face begins to take on the countenance of your soul. And sometimes you see older people and they've got this glow about them. Just the happiest, friendliest, loving people. You look at them and go, man, I want that to be my grandpa, you know? It just looks like he can sit down on his knee and just have a great old talk, you know? And the other people just... You just don't even want to know their name. Life has been so bitter and so hard, they're so disgusted, it's just like, whoa. Just a time bomb waiting to go off. After a while, it just starts to show on your face. Your contentment or your discontentment. It's not greener on the other side. The story of the two teardrops. Two little teardrops were floating down the river of life. One teardrop asked the other, who are you? I am a teardrop from a girl who loved a man and lost him. Who are you? The first teardrop replied, I'm a teardrop from the girl who got him. One cried she lost him, one cried she got him. Grass isn't greener on the other side. Your life is what you make of it. Life is God's gift to you, and what you do with it is your gift back to Him. And we all must live in one of two tents. Content or discontent. And you have the power within yourself to choose your attitude and your perspective on life. And if you will come to the realization that this very day you don't deserve, it's a gift from God, you'll celebrate it. But if this very day you think the world owes you something and it's not coming, you're not going to celebrate it. You're going to mourn over it. Don't be a mourner. Be a celebrator. Celebrate life. Realize, man, today is the day I can go out and play ball with my kids. Today's the day we can go catch a movie. Today's the day we can sit down and eat a hamburger together. You've been with me in Indonesia, you just thank God for hamburgers. You know what I'm saying? Today's the day I can kiss my spouse and tell him I love him. Today is a day that I can celebrate the gift of life. And Satan, I'm not going to let you take that from me any longer. I'm not going to live my life as a mourner. I'm not going to live my life as a pessimist. I'm not going to live my life as one wondering what could have been. Hey, when you get on the other side, you'll be able to realize all the different scenarios of what could have been and what was, and that'll all come clear. Right now, make the most of it. Get into it. When you worship God, get into it. When you pray, get into it. And when you're tired and you can't get into it anymore, take a nap. And when you wake up, get into it! You see what I'm saying? So there can be no greater compliment paid to a person than to call them godly. Godliness with contentment is your greatest gain. Don't let it pass you by. If there's only two things you could gain out of this life when it's all said and done, make sure you walk away with a bundle of godliness and a bundle of contentment in your pocket. And don't let anybody take it from you.
You've been listening to the Rivers of Revival, the tape ministry of Calvary Chapel of Menifee with Pastor Gary Galbraith. For more information, visit our website, revival.tv, or call us at 866-770-7711. Until next time, God bless.